Hey there, are you sitting down? Good, because Wayfair's end of season sale is here and you can shop it from your couch. It's Wayfair's Labor Day clearance and it's on now. Right now, you can score up to 70% off everything home at Wayfair, like up to 50% off outdoor furniture and decor, and up to 70% off area rugs, plus amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals on Wayfair home finds in every style. And get it all with fast shipping on everything right to your door. From furniture to faucets, this is your last chance of the season to score huge deals at Wayfair. Don't let the final days of summer pass you by without shopping these end-of-season savings. So don't wait. Like summer, these savings won't last. Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 70% off everything home. Celebrate your holiday weekend with can't-miss savings before they run out. Shop Wayfair's Labor Day clearance now through September 2nd at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Dispensing cannabis business knowledge beyond a million square feet of cultivation space, CannabisRadio.com proudly presents Blunt Business, harvested by Strainwise Consulting. Together, we will navigate the challenges and opportunities of one of the most profitable industries on earth. Join us each episode to hear our weekly roundtables and interviews with industry professionals. Now, let's delve into some Blunt Business with your host.
Greetings and salutations. Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. My next guest runs a new startup company that seeks to become a pan-African vertically integrated cannabis company that not only leverages Africa's prime position as a low-cost producer of quality cannabis-related products, but also brings African or continental or diaspora brands to the global market. And joining me right now is the CEO of
Afrihelios
Global, Darren Hickman, here on Blunt Business. You're joining us from South
Africa. Yes, I'm in Cape Town at the moment. So it's late afternoon here in my town.
Right. And thank you again for making time. Glad to have you join us in your busy schedule. Let's go ahead and talk about this, because it's a fascinating idea where, again, to go ahead and talk about different continents. We might have talked about cannabis when it comes to Australia or when it comes to Asia or Europe or South America, but we have not talked extensively about Africa. And so I'm really interested about that today. So let's go ahead and thank you for making it really just having us the opportunity to go and learn about what that market's all about. Sure. Here on the program. So Afrihelios Global is a full value chain focused Southern African producer, processor, and distributor headquartered in Bethesda, Maryland, with active offices in Cape Town, South Africa, and Maseru, Lesotho. The team has a combined 60 years of corporate finance, agribusiness, and project management industry expertise. So obviously you have the wherewithal with a lot of different pieces of the business needed to cover this market. So talk to me about the origins of setting up the cannabis market, not just South Africa. We want to go make sure to put the distinction Southern Africa and what kind of obstacles you've had along.
Sure, not a problem at all. Again, thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to talk about the growth of the industry on the continent, because as you said, to a large degree, it's not been part of the global discourse about the cannabis industry. And I think it's a big mistake, because I think out of most all of the continents, Africa's probably, particularly Southern Africa more specifically, is well positioned to be extremely competitive, particularly with low production cost on the continent. It has a distinct advantage when it comes to the climate, years, generations literally of cannabis cultivation experience on the ground here, labor cost. And so, we saw an opportunity, Afrihelios saw an opportunity to really build out, a pan-African vertically integrated cannabis business. We got our first license in Lesotho. So we got a license to cultivate ranging from hemp, medicinal, were you gonna say something?
No, I want to go ahead and jump in about Lesotho a little bit later on because of the licenses that you got. So I want to tap into that a little bit later on. What I was wanting to go through as well, there are a couple of new stories that have come out recently when it comes to cannabis and hemp that are fascinating. So in South Africa alone, let's just like focus there, that right now we're learning about that there's a new draft cannabis master plan from the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform, and Rural Development. And and the plan of priorities is the signing of the Cannabis for Private Purposes Bill into law within the 2022-2023 financial year. And now in South Africa, that's in the next 2 years we can get that coming in. As for hemp, you have now a hemp program that's in place that could be initiated as early as 2023. So in the most popular, not so much popular, but the most modernized country, I would imagine, you're getting that kind of direction, which would obviously then go ahead and spread throughout the rest of that area.
Right. Yeah. So essentially what's happening in South Africa, South Africa was the first country, in fact, to decriminalize the use of cannabis. They did that just about in 2017. They did that. They were the first ones to do it. They decriminalized it. But what they did not do is create any regulation for the commercialization of cannabis. You know, so it's still illegal to buy and sell cannabis products in South Africa. They're in the process right now of, now, as you indicated, kind of reconciling the legislation and building it out in a way that will allow for, you know, not just the medicinal usage, because it's already medicinally, you can access cannabis in South Africa medicinally, although the take up has been quite low. In this new legislation, they're going to be focusing on, you know, legalizing it, recreational usage of cannabis. And so there's, you know, quite a bit of effort going into that. It's taking longer than we would have hoped. In fact, back in 2017, when they first decriminalized it, the goal was to actually by now, you know, have that framework, that legislative framework done. But it's taking a little bit longer. But as you said, you know, South Africa has, you know, the most modern economy on the continent. And in fact, right now, it's the only country that is a part of the Pharmaceutical Inspection Convention. So it gives it a distinct advantage when it comes to exporting kind of GMP certified output. Right now, you know, we have license Lesotho, but because they're not part of the PIC, you can't get GMP certification. So if you're trying to access those markets, you still have to go through your processing in South Africa in order to do that. But South Africa is ahead of the curve there.
And so it just to, as context right there, in the story I'm reading from hemptoday.net, this story just came out today as I was reporting through this today. The reschedule, this release of this National Cannabis Master Plan follows the government's rescheduling of CBD and THC in May 2020 through the amendment of previous drug laws, exemption of industrial hemp from medical control under a 0.2% THC guideline. And this change also after a landmark constitutional court judgment in September 2018, which you're referencing, ruling the use, possession, and cultivation of cannabis in private dwellings for personal use was not illegal and should be allowed in South Africa. So glad to see this is kind of going along, but they're seeing what other countries are doing, and it's kind of just following suit and really to try to create some kind of revenue. And, of course, obviously tax revenue, and really to help boost the economy in this area. And hopefully the same thing could be done in other areas because we see what it's done in other areas. Now, the other thing that's been really important is what your team's been able to do. You recently announced the launch of $450,000 in a seed capital round campaign, U.S. dollars, by the way. And you also democratized access to cannabis-related investment for communities who've been historically marginalized by the industry. And because of this, this is what you said. I want to read a quote from you. I thought it was very important. Quote, the crowdfunding platform is very useful for this round of capital raise in particular, as it allows greater individual investment participation. There was a critical need to include the African diaspora and Friends of Africa to both to ensure social equity in the burgeoning and highly profitable global cannabis industry market. It also fits well with our inclusive distribution strategy, whereby AfriHelios will supply major urban cannabis retail markets in the U.S., including Oakland, Detroit, Atlanta, and Newark, directly from production centers in Maseru, Lesotho, and other parts of the region. That's amazing. So the scope of this campaign, the expectations you're using, wrap my head around what you've been doing here from the funding to be able to go ahead and export cannabis to these
Sure. You know, you've touched on some of the key factors. First of all, you know, social equity and just, you know, the whole concept of shared value throughout, you know, the value chain is critical to, you know, who we are in our business model. Now, we understand the history of cannabis and some of the issues and, you know, how certain communities were particularly, you know, targeted with respect to that criminalization. And we want to be drivers of change. And then on the African continent, we want to make sure that, you know, there's a new way of doing business with these agricultural and kind of extractive industries, because for a long time, the way it worked is that, you know, the agriculture or these various extracts, the raw materials were taken out of the continent with no value added to it, which didn't help the tax base, as you alluded to, and value was added, you know, subsequent when it reached the market. We want to do as much of that value addition as, you know, economically possible here on the continent, to benefit, you know, the local community, the tax base, jobs, training. So that's very important to us. And you mentioned, you know, the capital raising, like the crowdfunding. You know, particularly with opportunities in Africa, to a large degree, they've only been accessible to, you know, your accredited investor. You know, those who make, you know, over, you know, $200,000 individually or $300,000 as a family, and they haven't been able to access these. And so we saw a chance here through the crowdfunding to bring this, you know, this cannabis industry opportunity to people who traditionally didn't have access to it, because there's a lot of pent up demand around these kinds of investments. And so we wanted to make sure that we could, you know, really do our part to, you know, satisfy and access, you know, that pent up demand in the market, in the U.S. particularly.
It's amazing you were able to get the capital in a market in the continent of Africa like that. Plus, the other thing I would imagine is when you're trying to go and service those urban markets and you're trying to bring that cannabis that's exported, the branding opportunities, the say, you know, exported from Africa, the idea that that's going to just be the extra appeal. Look, we are helping our ancestors. Mm-hmm. We're helping our heritage grow and thrive from it. So, again, it's that personal thought of, you know, giving back. Again, that's a different – you know what? Everybody wants to talk about social equity. You know, when everybody, and this is where I think it's fascinating, you know, the term African-Americans is still pretty new to the Black community for the last few decades. But, I mean, you know, and there was a time there was an appreciation and there was a lot of symbolism where people would be in certain dress or understanding or really trying to go visit and, you know, celebrate and embrace the culture. But then it's kind of been pulled away, and there's I think there's a lot of factors why that has happened. I mean, I don't know why, but again, everybody talks about social equity at home. Well, what about, you know, back home, the culture that you came from that you begat?
You know,
why not?
You've touched on such an important point. It's part of the reason, you know, I'm even here. You know, I've been living on the continent for so long. It's really trying to bridge, you know, that African diaspora with the continent on a number of different levels. You've mentioned culturally, just reconnecting, and historically, you know, being an American of African descent and having my experience in America to, you know, a large degree driven by being an American of African descent, you know, there's a clear connection. I also feel like it's an opportunity to build a new economic power base. I think there's just so much economic opportunity on the continent as a market itself, and also as just a source of, you know, exports to the rest of the world. And it makes sense that, you know, we can bring skills here, you know, to the market to help grow these opportunities, to really help add value that benefit both the continent and, you know, African Americans. You talk about, you know, issues of wealth and the, you know, that disparity in the United States, you know, in terms of African Americans being so far behind in terms of wealth. I think being able to do business on the continent, building that bridge, creates additional avenues to build wealth and strengthen the community financially. So that's a very important part of what we're doing.
Wonderful. We're going to go and hold on to that. Come back with Darren Hickman of Efrahelios Global here on Blunt Business. Back with more questions with him. We're going to go and talk about the current state of cannabis in Africa. We're going to delve into that a little bit more after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Elevate your everyday with that Shuggies feeling, with the sweet taste of Shuggies. Add a cup of Shuggies to your morning coffee. Ah, how sweet it is. Shuggies infuses cannabis and cane sugar to make it the perfect sweetener with benefits. Make your happy hour happier with a dunk of Shuggies in your drink. Order your Shuggies now at shoogies.com or find it in dispensaries throughout California. Whenever you crave a little sweet, pick up Shuggies, the sweet, sweet take-anywhere treat.
I hope you didn't forget about us, because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
I'm back with Darren Hickman, the CEO of Afrahelios Global, LLC, here on Blunt Business. And prior to Afrahelios Global, Darren, I got to talk about your background. And I never really go much into people's backgrounds, because I'm not one of those programs that's like, well, tell us about how you got into cannabis. No, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do the, like, the startup and then build up. No, because you know what? We don't want to hear what, I mean, yeah, it might have been nice what you were doing at like 5 years old or when you came out of high school.
Right.
But I'm not doing that. I think we want to just go ahead. We have short attention spans. Let's roll all the way up to where you are right before you joined and started doing Afrahelios Global. So you have decades of experience in strategic business development to the Southern Africa region from financial and medical backgrounds. I want to talk about the attachment you had to the region and your mission overall.
For sure. Well, I think, you know, not to go back to, as you mentioned, you know, to when I'm 5 years old, but I think my attachment to Africa in many ways started when I was in university, in fact. In college. And, you know, during the late 80s, you know, give you a sense of my age, I'm over 50. I was actively involved in the divestment.
Can't tell. I'm watching on camera. I don't see it. But I'm just saying.
A couple years in the 50s.
Good skin.
You know, we don't, as they say, black don't crack. No, but, but you know, yeah, I was active in the divestment movement, you know, when I was in college. And so I was one of those guys protesting, taking over student buildings and things of that nature. And I also went to school with a couple of South Africans that were that had been transfer students. And I have this indelible memory in my mind one morning, you know, that the morning that Mandela was released from prison, and I was living in the African Cultural Center, you know, on campus. And I just remember being awakened by like this stomping and that ululating sound. I'm not sure if you've ever heard it, but I can't even replicate it. It's high pitched. And it was the South African students that celebrating that Mandela had just been released from prison. And I tell you, you know, even now I get goosebumps, you know, to see, you know, they were celebrating tears of joy. And that just stuck in my memory. And so, you know, it, South Africa ended up being a bit of a constant theme throughout. So after university, I joined a law firm in New York City, Paul Weiss Rifkin, during the transition period. And they were exchanging South African lawyers with American lawyers. And so I became great friends with the South African lawyer, Italian South African Marco Masati, introduced him to rugby in the United States. And funny enough, years later, he's a great, huge private equity lawyer in the United States. And they have just bought a major rugby franchise back here in South Africa. But so there was that. And then when I went to business school to get my MBA, I had an internship in Windhoek, Namibia for 3 months with an American company that was doing business. And so, you know, I've always had, you know, I've had that connection. Then after I did the J.P. Morgan, I did the Wall Street thing for a little bit with J.P. Morgan. You know, I felt that pull back to the region. You know, I was looking for change and for something more meaningful to do.
Well, when you're in a corporate environment, you want to go somewhere else.
I became feeling disillusioned. And don't get me wrong. I enjoyed a lot of what I was doing because I helped J.P. Morgan start their sports entertainment group back then. That was working with professional athletes and helping them, you know, build, maintain the wealth, you know, that they were building. But it was still, you know, it was kind of Wall Street and corporate America, and I needed something different. And literally, I have a cousin who lived here in Johannesburg back in 2000. I flew over for his wedding. It's amazing how when you get away from your day-to-day life, you get clarity. And literally on a bus trip with the family, I said, hey, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to quit, you know, go back home, quit my job, and I'm going to move here to South Africa and, you know, start all over again. And that's literally what I did. Now, I did the banking thing for a little while when I first got here, and then I started, you know, doing the entrepreneurial thing and have been doing that since.
I got to unpack some of that. I wish we could talk about J.P. Morgan and your and starting the sports sector. I could go on for a while about that. That's a fascinating area, but only got 30 minutes. Now, first of all, apartheid was a catalyst early on for you to go ahead, and that's your activism, that is your passion, that was your drive to go into what you're doing. And then this, honestly, what I really loved about going through your experience was just the wealth of knowledge that you accrued after all this time. Again, medical, financial, MBA, coming into the space, and obviously you have all this wealth to come in, and the wherewithal and the resources, the people you could network with, that you could go ahead and persuade to go ahead and come to the subcontinent and to come help in this effort, which is obviously how you've been able to go and connect this network of people to
Helios. You know, that's been a major thing, is trying to connect that network, having, you know, built that network back in the United States, having been on the ground. You know, I've been here, living here, kind of back and forth for 20 years. I spent a few years back in the U.S. building a business there. But for the last 20 years, most of it, I've been here in Southern Africa. And so I've got that experience across a range of industries. And so people trust my understanding, judgment, and knowledge of the region. And so I've become this great kind of connector between the U.S. and, you know, Southern Africa. And I'm leveraging it, you know, to the benefit of AfriHelios.
Let's talk about the current state of cannabis in Africa and try to summarize as best as possible so that for those of you who are not aware, here's what I found out. There's a story from thearticle.com that gave a good comprehensive view. A number of African countries are tapping into the lucrative marijuana market, legalizing or relaxing laws on cannabis in the continent. From Uganda to Zimbabwe, there is growing interest in a valuable crop through exports following years of resistance, mostly from religious groups opposed to the drug's legalization. Malawi relaxed laws against cannabis growing and selling, joining around 10 other nations that have decriminalized marijuana for medical purposes. Zambia legalized marijuana production for export in December 2019. Lesotho was the first African country to legalize cannabis. So that's a starting point right here for what you're doing, because then your company was awarded the initial license to dispense or cultivate cannabis from the Kingdom of Lesotho's Ministry of Health to cultivate, process, package, and export cannabis-related products. You got the full concierge for that. To global markets from Maseru, Lesotho. So talk about this breaking ground of this market, what Lesotho has done for you, the advantage of that, and, you know, for companies like yours, how fertile is the ground to grow and expand in Africa as a whole?
Well, you know, I think first, one minor thing. We have our license in Lesotho, but we didn't get the first license. Another company got the first license. We got ours in 2019. The first license was issued in 2018, I believe. But we were amongst the first group of people.
Right, to distinguish. First African country to legalize, but you were given your initial license, not
initial license was in Lesotho. You know, so we got the...
I blame the article.com for a little bit of, you know, a little bit of confusion. <right
there. laughs> Not a problem.
Please go ahead.
But we've got a license, as you said, quite broad opportunity in terms of what we can do. You know, honestly, the only thing we really can't do is just sell in Lesotho. Otherwise, in terms of, you know, cannabis and hemp products, we can pretty much cultivate what we want, manufacturing process. We can pretty much do it all there in Lesotho. So that's been great for us to have that kind of breadth in order to, you know, to have those options, you know, going forward. So, you know, that's our first license. We're working on, we're in discussions now with a couple of other countries trying to pursue some opportunities there also as they're evolving. We have not yet put our first seed in the ground because we're still, as you mentioned, we're still in our capital raise stage. Although we got our license at the end of 2019, what happened, as you probably know, is right around that time, you know, there was that market correction. And, you know, there's, you know, quite a bit of, you know, it's quite tumultuous in the industry, which is tough when you're beginning a capital raise exercise. And then, of course, the huge one that hit us, you know, the pandemic. And so it set us back quite a bit. So, you know, we had planned to, you know, fly across and do our roadshow in the U.S. and, you know, leverage those networks and raise capital. But it set us back a bit. But you know what? The great thing about that, there's a reason for everything, is that setback caused us to take a step back and re-envision not just our capital raise strategy, but our overall business strategy. And so subsequently, we pivoted in terms of, you know, our strategic growth plan. You know, bring in the crowdfunding aspect of our raise was also in part a function of having to pivot, because originally we were just going to go down the traditional market. Hey, let's go raise the capital, get this thing rolling, you know, off the ground. But as we had a little bit more time to, you know, think about it, you know, we saw this opportunity. Hey, wait a second. Now, if we crowdfund, we can make this available to people who previously would have never even heard of this opportunity. So, you know, that's been...
Well, I want to know how you pitched it. I want to know how you pitched it all together and you were able to get anybody persuaded. Who did you have to go reach out to that were going to be They were going to be curious, and they were going to be receptive.
No, I think the first market, the first segment that we went after, there is, believe it or not, there is a fairly large segment of not just in America, but even in UK and Europe, because we've got investors out of the UK in our company also, that have had an interest in the African continent for quite a while. Some culturally, some are considering repatriation and, you know, just kind of picking up and moving back to the continent. And others just see the value, you know, of, you know, African themed opportunities. Others see the growing influence, you know, culturally of Africa. You know, things like, I hate to refer to Hollywood, things like the, like Black Panther really did kind of bring African themes, you know, to the forefront of the zeitgeist and, you know, to the American mindset. And so there are a lot of people started looking. 2 years ago, there was called the Year of Return, where Ghana, you know, just brought back literally thousands of African Americans to visit the continent. So there's this growing interest. And so all we had to do is really kind of tap into that existing interest in the continent. And then you combine that with, obviously, you know, the cannabis industry and just the, you know, exponential growth that's happening. You know, you bring those two themes together, and then you kind of throw in a dash of, hey, have you noticed people like Jay-Z, Isaiah Thomas, Snoop Dogg, those guys are all launching, you know, their own kind of cannabis brands. Clearly, there's an opportunity in this market. We are looking to, you know, leverage Africa's advantage and introduce that into, you know, the United States and the rest of the global market. And it's resonating. It's resonating. People see the opportunity.
And that's the whole thing. I mean, they're building new brands in a very saturated market. But the chance to go and say, let's break ground in Africa.
Differentiator.
I mean, and here's the best part. And Darren, I got to put this point, because there's another thing I wanted to make mention of. Because, and I now understand it's Lesotho. And I said it wrong for years. And I'm sorry about that to the country of Lesotho.
Can I say something quickly before you move
on? I mean,
on?
Honestly,
don't
sincerely.
Feel bad. I've got a colleague who's been living in Africa, Namibia, and is actively involved in Lesotho and still says Lesotho. I don't get how he does it, but don't feel bad. A lot of people still do it.
Right. No, I understand. But here's the thing, is that Lesotho is you talk about a ground zero for showing how well cannabis can do successfully in Africa, because of the fact that WorldBank.org actually mentions how that the economic performance in the country has been negatively affected by sluggish global economic growth and a major downturn in both emerging markets and advanced economies. GDP growth is about 1.6% as of 2015-2019, also negatively impacted by COVID-19. And in the medium term, there are projects that are being going on, boosted by green energy projects and, you know, some other government initiatives to reinforce financial inclusion. But that's not enough. And then also, unemployment, 23%. National poverty rate is around 49% right now. And again, this company, this country, if cannabis is brought now with the opportunity that the kingdom has provided you, and how quickly that all those economic problems can be turned around if you're able to grow. But now the one thing I also want to ask about, because of this area in particular, because in some other areas in Africa will be the same thing, the country is mountainous and landlocked. The idea is that the environment on what to grow and how to cultivate, what will be the environment of that when you initially start that first grow?
I think it is landlocked. It's obviously ring-fenced by South Africa on all sides, but doesn't present a problem. And it is a mountainous region, but in many ways, that's an advantage. I think there's a couple of things about Lesotho that's advantageous. One, it gets on average 300 days of sun, which provides, you know, great sun for growing. And in fact, the name Afrihelios is in fact an outgrowth of the 300 days of sun. And so Afri is just plain Afri, and Helios is the Greek word for sun. And so that's a distinct advantage.
Well, the reason I bring up landlocked is the fact that it's, I mean, I don't know what your irrigation efforts are going to be, or the, you know, access to water, or what kind of resources to go and tap in from. Plus, are you going to be doing anything where this will be more of a greenhouse with a solar paneling kind of project, so you can control the amount of sun that's coming in, or will it just be a direct?
No, this is going to be a greenhouse. It's going to be a greenhouse grow, as you said, with solar panels to control the amount of sun. And in terms of those critical resources like water and electricity, that's another advantage of being in Lesotho is that in terms of water and electricity, they've got great access to it. They've got a dam there that, you know, assures that it's got, you know, more than enough electricity. It's cheaper than almost any other place in Southern Africa. And then there's access to more than enough water. So we won't, from that perspective, it's actually great for us compared to a lot of other African countries that where access to those things are much more uneven. And then, you know, the road network is pretty strong. And then because, you know, we'll have to go through South Africa, obviously the infrastructure in South Africa is amazing. And so when you marry those teams together, it's great.
Now, what about the export possibilities? When you're looking to export it out, talk to me about the transportation.
Well, yeah, that's, you know, it's pretty straightforward. You know, you truck it from, you can truck it, you know, into South Africa or you can truck it into Maseru, fly it into South Africa. So it depends if we're going to be processing, we'll fly probably into Cape Town, where our partner is, Afriplex, that's going to be doing our processing. They do the processing. And then, you know, the export, the trade infrastructure in South Africa is world-class. So we won't have any problems with respect to that, the transport issue at all.
I'm only bringing this up, and I appreciate, to cut you off a little bit before, on Afrihelios and just the naming. I want to get that from you again. But what I'm getting from this is the fact that, I mean, again, we're seeing what there's been in South Africa. But if Lesotho becomes the hub that spreads out, and then, you know, again, this resonates, and other countries would follow suit. That's what happens. It's the key that picks the lock. That's what we're waiting for right here. Real quickly, you were mentioning Kingdom of the Sun. Give me the name of where the origin of Afrihelios came from again.
Sure. Afrihelios, we came through that name. We wanted, you know, they have the 300 days of sun, you know, average in Lesotho. And that's such a, you know, key factor. And as we were thinking about what's going to be a good name, you know, it kept coming up and it kept coming up. And, you know, we looked at the name Afrihelios. We didn't want to be, you know, with Afri being A-F-R-I. That was kind of too on the nose and too obvious. So we went with, you know, a play on it, something a little bit different. So this the A-P-H-R-I, but yeah, it's a little bit you know, cheeky, to be honest. And then in Helios, is the Greek word for sun. So we combined those two words, you know, together to create Afrihelios Global. That's how we came to the name. Yeah.
Fascinating. All right. So I want to go into another commercial break. I want to go ahead and talk a little more about what's going on in Africa. And more specific, what's happening in the northern part of the country. Quite a few things that are happening about legalization efforts there. We'll talk about that again with the CEO of Afrihelios Global, LLC, Darren Hickman. By the way, the website is afrihelios.com, A-P-H-R-I-H-E-L-I-O-S.com. You now know what it means. Take a look at the website as we go to break. We'll be right back.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business. Hey, take a look at this. They're selling smart pots.
They have pot that can make you smart? Where is it?
Not that kind of pot. Smart pots are the best aeration container to grow your plants. Check this out. This is the original fabric container for faster producing, healthier plants. They're made with a superior fabric that delivers high yields. Plus, smart pots are reusable and sustainable, so you can use them over and over again, no matter if you use them indoor or outdoor.
That's very smart, but how good are they for the environment?
Smart pots are BPA-free and lead-free, so you'll always be able to ensure a pure, clean grow, and they're 100% made in the U.S. Over 28 million smart pots have already been sold, so it seems like a smart investment.
Look for smart pots in close to 2,000 garden centers throughout North America and ask for the original fabric container. Find a store near you or order yours online at smartpots.com.
I hope you didn't forget about us because we're back with Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com.
I'm back with final questions with Darren Hickman, CEO of Afrihelios Global here on Blunt Business. Darren, more recently, the Moroccan government has approved the bill authorizing the medical, cosmetic, and industrial use of cannabis. Cosmetic.
Yeah.
South Africa and Egypt have been working on legalization efforts there. So, again, it's the whole continent is finding that obviously there are some governments that are looking into it. And, you know, talk to me about the really what's the motivation or the output or the, you know, the modus operandi for all these nations now considering legalization and what advantages they might get from it in the remainder of the continent?
Yeah, that's a great question. Now, I think the other African countries are, you know, starting to hop on the bus. You know, they've seen the buzz that's being created with Lesotho, you know, legalizing, you know, South Africa decriminalizing, Malawi, it just issued 86 new licenses recently in that country. Zimbabwe, Zambia are all kind of going through that process. So I think a lot of other countries see the opportunity to really help, you know, build out their tax base. I think that's the initial driver that's making a lot of countries look at it. So they're beginning to consider it. And I do think you'll see a process similar to what you saw in South Africa, where they, actually, no, let me take a step back. Lesotho, probably more like Lesotho, where first you'll see, you know, the commercialization, legalization of the commercialization of it for export purposes. Because there's still quite, whether it be, you know, Islam in some of the northern, you know, African countries, or, you know, Christianity in some of the southern African countries, religion is still an influential factor in terms of legislation. And there's pushback. There's still pushback on the recreational use of cannabis, you know, on the continent. So I think what will happen is you'll see first, you know, legalization for, you know, export. Then over time, as I think people get more familiar with it, then you'll start seeing, you know, decriminalization and the ability to use it recreationally and internally, and then build an internal consumer market over time. That's what I see. And in fact, if you ask me, you know, the best opportunity really is going to be the continent itself. You know, in the short run, yes, we're focusing on export, you know, to the US market, you know, the European markets, because those are currently the bigger markets. But over time, Africa, if you ask me, is going to be the largest, probably the largest continental market to chase. It's got the fastest growing population. It's got the youngest population, the fastest growing middle class. The population is going to double by 2050. And so it's going to be a huge consumer market. So we're also making sure that we position ourselves, you know, to really, you know, focus on Africa for consumption, not just for cultivation, processing, and export.
And what can you tell me about the quality of the plant that's going to be cultivated and grown, because if you're exporting, the level of compliance that will be needed, or any kind of issues of, obviously you can grow organic, you can obviously put a lot of things into place. I'm just wondering if there's anything about controlling the quality of the plant if it's going to be exported, what kind of expectations and needs?
Yeah, for sure. So with respect to, you know, cultivation, obviously, you know, our goal is going to be to become GACP certified, you know, as soon as possible. So that we have that, you know, that world-class cultivation operation. That's critical for us because we really want to change the perception I think many people have in terms of Africa and how things get done. You know, we want to reinforce that, you know, Africa can produce world-class quality products and output. So that's going to be, you know, fundamental to our business model. And then, you know, obviously with, you know, GMP certification, that's going to be the next thing. So it's going to be first getting that GACP. And then, you know, as we start getting into our own kind of extraction and, you know, processing, making sure that our operations are GMP certified so that we can access, you know, those markets that require that.
Well, I prefaced in the first break about the story about the national cannabis bill that's being put in the master plan, if you will. You know, they mentioned that cannabis looks like it's going to get up and going before hemp does. But I'm surprised that hemp wouldn't be much more accepted or given more access and being produced in that country, in that area as well. I would imagine it'd be grown.
Hemp is being grown also. And in fact, you know, hemp derived products, CBD products, are already legal in South Africa. So that market is open already. I think the challenge in South Africa specifically is that it's still, you know, the products are still expensive. There's, you know, people growing hemp and CBD for export, but in terms of the internal consumption market, it's really only accessible to a small percentage of the population at this point in time, because it's still quite expensive as a product. You know, there's a premium price on it. I think they're going through, you know, that traditional kind of product pricing. You know, you want to first skim off your early adopters who are willing to pay a premium for a product. And then once that market begins to slow down, then you begin moving, you know, slowly down until you get to the, you know, the value products where the more, you know, the more accessible to the rest of the market. Right. There are some other factors that are going into it also. There's still not yet a huge local manufacturing industry. So unfortunately, a lot of the products, believe it or not, that are here in the CBD space are imported, you know, from Europe and the U.S.
And also, just a curiosity, what's the status of, say, homegrown? If people wanted to do it from their homes, is that something that's
legal? You know, how common it is, I'm not really sure, you know, what that data is, because they're still trying to accumulate it, because it's still so fairly new. But you're finding more and more people are growing it. You hear a lot of people talking amongst themselves, yeah, I've got my plant in my backyard, a couple of plants. So a lot of people are beginning to do that. And you're finding these clubs, people are trying to find that gray area, because it's legal to grow, you know, for personal use. It's legal to consume at home or in private. And so there are these clubs that are popping up now where, you know, they effectively grow for you. They grow for you at a fee, and you're able to, you know, partake there in that club. It's still kind of gray, and there's, you know, some pressure from the government to stop it. But you're seeing a lot of kind of creative entrepreneurship in that space.
So in Lesotho, when you have the cultivation and all the access that you have now that the kingdom has provided, the other thing I want to ask is about, you know, where do you go into, obviously, exporting for market, but what about marketing in the country itself? I mean, could you see dispensaries popping up somewhere where you have cannabis that's available to go ahead and be purchased
that
reasonably?
Eventually that's going to happen. I think once, as you mentioned, that national plan, I think once that's bedded down, they haven't come out with any details yet, obviously, but I think you're going to see dispensaries popping up, you know, all over the country. And in a country like South Africa, where, you know, coming back to that social equity thing is very important. You're going to see a lot of focus on making sure that, you know, there's social equity in that industry also in South Africa, so that, you know, communities that have previously seen, you know,
right,
disadvantaged because of apartheid have access to this new industry.
Right. So the idea is that the amount of licenses that are being doled out, you're obviously going to have more of a equitable social equity there than you would have in America or in other areas.
Yeah, basically. Definitely compared to the U.S., there will be a lot more, in part just because of, you know, the voting population is different here than it is in the United States. So in South Africa, you know, the ANC has been in power since the end of apartheid. And so, you know, a core, a linchpin of their whole platform is what's called BE, or Black Economic Empowerment. And so they have been making an effort as much as possible to give opportunities to, you know, up and coming entrepreneurs of color, you know, to benefit.
And that's why I don't get where, you know, and that's really, maybe just being stupid, I don't know, it sounds like it's so simple, but why there are not more entrepreneurs from America that, you know, okay, you're trying to do things, if you're a black entrepreneur,
yes,
you're a minority in America, you're the overwhelming majority in Africa. Why not try to go ahead and build and emerge in a market that's going to be growing right away? So for those that are looking to get into cannabis, if you're having the trouble of trying to find social equity here in the States, then, you know, take your investment. I mean, if they can do that, invest in what you're doing there and what you're doing at Afro Helios. Obviously, you know, you're investing, you're taking the seed rounds. Now, is that mindset pretty much the reason why some of the money has come in that you've been able to get?
That's some of it. For some people investing, they see an opportunity, as you said, to, you know, invest it and get that quote unquote social equity, because, you know, it's Africa, so everybody looks like they do. So that's a major driver for a lot of the people that are investing, is, you know, to be able to participate and, you know, help develop the continent and, again, find a new economic base from which to derive value. You know, yes, the U.S. has a lot of opportunities, but it also has a lot of hurdles and a lot of its own issues to overcome. And that's not to say Africa doesn't either, because one of the big challenges, I think the reason you don't see more, you know, African Americans making the move here is it's not the easiest thing to do. First, a lot of people just don't know about Africa, and their perceptions are unfortunately based on, you know, inaccurate media presentation of it, and just not being educated. So they think lions and things of that nature, and, you know, famine comes to mind often versus, places like Johannesburg or Sandton that are world-class cities. So that's part of it. And then even when you get over that hurdle, you know, making the move to create a sustainable lifestyle is not the easiest thing to do. I've been able to make it here for 20 years, but, you know, there have been some times that we're tough. You know, it hasn't always been easy. And I think it was my commitment, you know, to making it work here that allowed me to sustain it. But I've seen a number of, African-Americans come over trying to make it happen and just kind of, losing the motivation and heading back home because it's not the easiest. But we're trying to make it easier.
There's so much investment. Right, but there is so much investment capital that a lot of people that could go and bring over this way. I mean, it's different. Okay, for myself, if I wanted to be able to invest back in where my family came from in Cuba, can't because of the dictatorship. Right. There's no way it can be done right now. I would not want to go ahead and contribute to that government. In Haiti, a lot of people that I know, good friends from Haiti, same thing. They're under a dictatorship as well. And it's unfortunate because it's a beautiful country, beautiful people. So if you can't do it there, you know, if I knew that in Africa, if my ancestry came from there, you're going to have leaders that have not gotten to the point where, listen, they're trying to bring their countries, from drowning in economic issues, finding a way to go ahead and get forward. So they're going to take the money. They're going to allow you to do what you want to do to let you grow because you're going to help raise all these countries one by one. Why wouldn't you want to do that? That's my pitch to those people that are listening to this program. Do this. Go ahead. If it's not through Afrihelios, invest in Africa.
Amen. Amen. I can't say amen enough to that. I mean, really, that's what we're trying to do. We're leveraging Afrihelios in many ways as a platform, obviously, to get investment in our company, but just to expose people to business opportunities on the ground here. Because there is a core group of African Americans that are on the ground here and that have made it and have very well developed relationships on the ground. And so what we've been trying to do is really start presenting these opportunities to people back in the U.S. to say, hey, this continent is open for business. People don't realize six of the fastest growing economies are here on this continent. So it is literally the continent. Wow. Now, I've always been saying it's the continent of the future, but I think it's not just the future. It's starting right now. You've got to get in right now. And I think it's just going to be only upwards from here. Now, we're excited about it.
There we go. Absolutely. So now, really quickly before we wrap things up, how can people go ahead and reach out to you? Obviously, I mentioned the website, afrihelios.com, APHRIHELIOS.com. But if they want to go ahead and work with you, if they want to invest in your venture, and they want to learn more about what's going on in the continent, what can they do?
Well, I think the first, like you said, the website is a great kind of clearinghouse. Go to our website. Because even in terms of those who are interested in investing, once you get there's a button that you click. And depending on whether or not you're, an accredited investor, they'll take you to one page. And if you're more of a crowdfunding investor, it'll take you to our crowdfunding page. So definitely go to our website. It's a great source of information about us. But we're also in social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn. So you can go to any of those social media platforms and also get some information about us and just find links to get more info about Afrihelios.
Well, Darren, I hope we could follow your story. We can keep talking to you about this. And, I'd love to go and see how far you get along with this and keep talking to you about the market. So I'd love to go and open the invitation.
For sure. I'd love to come back and tell you more because we do have a couple of some exciting things that are literally about to launch. We're moving into the branding space a lot sooner than we anticipated. We're front loading that based on some short-term opportunities. And so we've got some really exciting things in the pipeline within the next couple of weeks that we're going to be coming to market with. So I'll definitely reach out to you and keep you in the loop around the evolution.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Again, I've been here with Darren Hickman, CEO of Afrihelios Global. Thank you for opening our eyes and really giving us all this information. Really
thank you
glad
so
to
much.
You.
I really appreciate you bringing me onto your platform. I appreciate everything you're doing for the industry and really feel honored to share the platform with you. So thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. And thank you, listeners, as always, for listening in. You got a lot of great information today. And for those of you, investment opportunity, it's arising. Go ahead and take a look at it. And we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.
And we're clear. That's it. The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.